Good morning, everybody. Thanks to Carrie for leading the songs. I chose the songs today, and you notice the privilege in that. I get to choose them and not lead them, and I get to enjoy them, and I appreciate your singing them together with us. Took a great deal of humility this morning for Matt and I to not wear our Razorback ties. Man, won a game after, 2017 or something like that. So I hope your week gets started off well today, and we hope everyone has a great week. And appreciate your joining us, and appreciate our families who are with us here, and also families who are with us with our live stream this morning. On the night when the Lord was betrayed, he took bread and he gave thanks. And he broke it, and he gave it to the disciples, and he said, "Do this in remembrance of me." And then he took a cup, and he gave thanks, and he gave it to them and told them as often as they drank it, they were to do it in remembrance of him. We tried to think through what that means to us as the Lord's people last Lord's Day morning. Now I ask us to remember that also on the night when the Lord was betrayed, he took a towel and wrapped it around him, and he took a basin with water, and he washed feet. And he said to his disciples, "Do to each other just as I have done to you." The first one, we do it together every Lord's Day morning. The second one, we read over like it's a thing that has now lost all meaning to us. If anything, we simply say, well, he made himself a lowly servant, and we let it go at that, without examining as much what it means to do just as he has done to each other, or for each other. This second one, however, expresses the spirit among the people who are observing the first in remembrance of Jesus. The second one is what gives life and meaning to the observance of the first one among the Lord's people on the Lord's Day. This morning, let's think about what this one might mean to us now if we were to try to draw parallels in our life together. John 13, verses 1 through 20, records the event. It's written in such vivid detail that I would like to read the passage together with you, and so as to involve you at least in some way physically, I'd like to ask if everyone would please be standing this morning for this scripture reading. John 13, verses 1 through 20. Remember, this is the opening scene in John's five chapters, which we refer to usually as the farewell discourse. They happen all one night with Jesus and his disciples. This is how John begins. "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said, 'Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I'm doing, you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "The one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you is plural there, all of you, are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was to betray him, and that's why he said, "Not all of you are clean." When he had washed their feet and had put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. I'm not speaking of all of you. I know whom I have chosen, but the scripture will be fulfilled. He who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me. I'm telling you this now before it takes place, that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever receives the one I send receives me, and whoever receives me receives the one who sent me." Be seated, please. So what do we make of that? Did the Lord intend for us to engage in a ceremony periodically with the washing of feet? Was he only concerned that we be willing to get down on our knees before each other and take a basin and wash each other's feet? Or when he said, "Do just as I have done to you," did he mean something about how we relate to each other? That's a question for us to pursue. In my mind, I put this together with where we have been the last two or three Lord's Day mornings in our thinking together. A couple weeks ago, we looked at the passage where the man said, "Lord, help us if you can." Last week, we tried to think about, "Help us, Lord, thy love to see." And here, we're learning about what it means to help each other in the way Jesus has helped each one of us. So let's look at what would we need to do to do just as he has done for us. What would we need to do toward each other? How would we go about doing toward each other just as he has done to us in a culture where foot washing is not a part of ordinary hospitality like it would have been then? How do we find parallels in our experience together now? From this account that John gives us, I want to suggest to you five principles about how we might help each other, how we might do to each other as the Lord has done for us, how we might wash one another's feet. I start here, and I think this is where the passage starts. First, know who you are in relation to God. In this passage, as I read it, it looks to me like Jesus is the only one in this whole picture who is not embarrassed by what takes place here. you can see pretty easily the discomfort among the disciples as they observe him wrapping that towel around him and then getting the basin and going around the tables where their feet are sticking out behind them according to their custom and starts doing for them what a slave ordinarily would have done at a dinner like that. Jesus, however, is the one who is confident. He is the one who is bold. He is the one who does what needs to be done. And the reason is because of what he knows about himself in relation to his Father. He knows that he's about to depart the world and go to the Father who sent him into the world to start with. He knows that his hour has come in that way. He knows, according to verse 3, that the Father has given all things into his hands, that he had come from God and that he was going back to God. Those details are really the reason why all the rest of this happens, because the Lord knows this about himself in relation to the Father. He knows his mission. He knows his purpose. He knows his identity. He knows what is going on. He knows what everything is about. And therefore, he does not find himself thinking that he's going to lose his position or worrying about what the other fellows are going to think about him or thinking about defending his dignity. He simply does what needs to be done. One of the big challenges in American culture today is for each one of us to understand ourselves, to know who we are in relation to God. We think of ourselves as with our rights as citizens, or with regard to what kind of social group or party we are attached to in our thinking, or what kind of other affiliations we may have, or what kind of other positions we may hold, either ideologically or in other ways in our lives. We need to see ourselves as children of the Father, as people who have been redeemed by the blood of Christ, or as persons who are attached to other members of the body of Christ and who can do something in the functioning body. We need to understand our value in relation to the Lord who has come into the world and sought us as if he were a shepherd looking for one sheep that was lost. And understanding ourselves in relation to God, we can be in a position to be not defensive, not ashamed, not hesitant, but courageous and bold enough just to do what needs to be done for each other. Know who you are in relation to God first. Second, in order to do just as Jesus has done, see what is needed for relationship among the people around you. And here, since the Lord is talking about you should do, you also should do as I have done to you, verse 15, then we're talking especially about each other here. In this situation, the custom was, the social custom was in their time, that when a banquet or a dinner was occurring like this, in which people were guests, this is the Passover supper here, but when a situation like this is going on, then customarily the host of the banquet would provide for all the guests water for them to wash their feet, which was, they would then position themselves around the table on their elbow on a low couch with their feet sticking out behind them. So as a matter of consideration and kindness and hospitality, this would be done. Or the host would provide a servant to do this. And later Jewish tradition This was a task left to Gentile servants. A person might wash his own feet for a banquet like this, or a slave might wash his feet for him. But no host would wash the feet of his guests, and the guest would not wash the feet of other guests. That was considered to be a dishonor to them and beneath their dignity, and something that could not be required of respect of or expected of anybody except maybe the lowest slave or servant in the household. In this situation, at this dinner, the Lord knew what was going on among his disciples. They walk in, and of course, there's no servant there to attend to them like this. And they're a little bit, maybe, embarrassed about that. But nobody makes a move to offer to attend to what would be obviously expected and needed for everybody. Nobody intends to do anything about it. In fact, Luke adds to us a detail that probably is relevant at this point in what Jesus sees when he looks around the table during the supper. You've got to remember what this supper means for him, but during the supper, he's aware of what's needed for relationship. Luke tells us in Luke 22, beginning at verse 24, as he describes this same occasion, this same meal, and where the Lord's Supper was instituted, right after he describes the institution of the supper, he says, a dispute also arose among them as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. Maybe it had to do with something, the seating positions or something. I don't know. But he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as the one who serves. For who is the greater, one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? That's in their practice. But I'm among you as the one who serves. Now, what happens from this point on in John 13 maybe is a visual aid illustration of the Lord's presence among them as the one who serves, and as a lesson in the Lord's kingdom and about real greatness in the Father's way of thinking. Know who you are in relation to God. See what is needed for relationship among people. It's hard to see this. We can see what's wrong. We can see what we don't like. We can see what we wish was different, what we demand to be different. But what's needed for relationship to be healthy and well? That's harder to see. You have to look for it. Third, do what you can to provide what's needed for relationship. You may not be able to do everything, but do what you can. In this text before us, it looks like there are 12 disciples present, and the Lord does something that helps 11 of them. Even he couldn't fix it all for all of them, but do what you can. So you kind of can imagine the image here as Jesus, hosting the supper, gets up from the supper during it, and as the disciples' eyes all obviously have to turn toward him and watch what's going on. And he lays aside his outer garment Everybody thinks, what's going on? What's he doing? He wraps a towel around himself and tied it around his waist and starts to dawn on him. Then he pours water into a basin and he begins to wash the feet of his disciples, making his way around the table, drying their feet with the towel around his waist, doing a slave's work for these guys who should have been serving him instead. The impropriety of this was felt by these guys, by the disciples, by all of them. I noticed M. Scott Peck, in one of his writings, makes the point that this is one of the most significant events in Jesus' life. Here's what he says about it. Until that moment, the whole point of things had been for someone to get on top. And once he had gotten on top, to stay on top or attempt to get further up. But here this man is already on top. The one who's the teacher, the master, the Lord, suddenly got down on the bottom and began to wash the feet of his followers. In that one act, Jesus symbolically overturned the whole social order. Hardly comprehending what was happening, even his own disciples were almost horrified at his behavior. Watch their actions. First, there's Peter. Peter, the one who had confessed Jesus and then told him, "You can't go to the cross. We won't let it happen. It's not proper." Now says, "You're never going to wash my feet." Jesus has to instruct him. We'll mention that in just a second here. And then Peter doesn't know at the time that later that same night he's going to be denying that he even knows Jesus. Before the end of John 13, that discussion takes place. Think about that. Jesus is washing his feet, knowing what he's got to tell Peter is going to happen. Then there's Judas sitting there, the one who's already, Satan's already has control of his heart. He's going to betray him before that night's over. Wonder what Judas is thinking about this Messiah. Is he thinking some guilty feeling? How can I sell out someone who would be willing to do even this for me? Or do you think he's thinking to himself, what a sorry excuse for a Messiah. I can't figure him out. Five or six days ago over there in Bethany, he let Mary pour that expensive oil on him and wipe his feet with her, dry his feet with the hair. And now here he is, with a slave's towel around himself and a basin, drying people's feet like that. How do you make heads or tails out of a Messiah like this? Jesus instructs them about this. He tells them, first off, this is not just the law, Peter. This is not wash your hands and your head with some cleansing ritual like the law would have required. This is you humbling yourself and allowing me to do for you what needs to be done in order for you to even have a share in me. And you don't understand it right now, but you will before long. What he's talking about is your willingness to humble yourself and let me do for you what needs to be done is going to eventually involve the sacrifice that really will cleanse you and give you a share in me. It's not going to be very long. Peter could look back on this and see the real meaning. This is not law. He goes ahead to say this is not cleansing either. This is not just about having clean feet, and it's not about being cleansed in some other way. He says that all of you are already clean. What did he mean by that? Over in chapter 15 and verse 3, it says, Jesus speaking to them, "Already you are clean because of the word I have spoken to you." The washing of their feet was not to have that kind of a physical impact on them or even a spiritual one. It wasn't to fulfill a law. It wasn't for cleansing. What it was an example. After Jesus is through, he puts his garments back on, takes his place, asks them if they know what he's done for them, and he makes the point, if you call me teacher and Lord, that's who I am. If I've washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. That's what he's getting at. He is teaching them that people who are depending on him for what they need should be willing to do what they can toward each other in the same way he has toward us. Do what you can to provide it. Now, what does that mean? If it were only so simple as I see your need and I get a tub full of water and a towel and some soap and wash your feet for you and then I'm done with you. Or if you could just do that for me, man, and then we'd have our obligation to each other fulfilled. But that's not what Jesus is getting at, is it? That's not the point. What really happens here, and when he says, I've given you example, you should do for each other what I've done for you. What really happens here is more basic than that. Merrill Tinney, in his commentary on John, offers this observation of what Jesus actually did. He deliberately subjected himself to the needs of his disciples and sacrificed himself for them by submitting to an authority which was beneath him. There is the challenge, to think about what's needed, to do what you can to provide it, and then forward to understand it as imitating the Lord in this way. To understand it as imitating the Lord when by submitting to an authority which is beneath you, you sacrifice your position, your place, your rights in order to serve the needs of the people around you. There is the challenge. To understand this most basic thing in relation to each other as something which is done in imitating the Lord. You know what imitating the Lord is, don't you? It's discipleship. It's being his disciple. It's imitating him. It's listening to his teaching and then following him and learning how to live from him. It's not something which simply can be relegated to the facts we know doctrinally. Those things are crucially important, but they enable us then to act like him, to imitate him, to do just as he has done for us toward each other. Colin Cruz, another commentator, says that the lesson here is a simple one. If as their Lord and teacher, it's not beneath his dignity to wash their feet, then it's not below their dignity to do the same for each other. The greatest of Jesus' disciples needs to be ready to render humble service to the least of the disciples when necessary. And then this observation. In cultures different from the one which Jesus and his disciples lived in, ours is, that will not take the form of foot washing. But there will always be ample opportunity for humble service to, in other ways, for humble service to make relationship possible. And then the fifth step here, trust Him about the blessing. When you are doing as He did, on a short-term basis, you may end up experiencing what He did on a short-term basis. One guy denied that night that he knew Him. Another guy sold Him out for money, betrayed Him. The other people were confused and eventually all fled. But He ended up raised up, vindicated, exalted, lifted up. This whole episode here in John 13 is a visual demonstration of what Philippians 2 and verses 6 through 8 describes. One empties himself and takes the form of a servant and humbles himself and becomes obedient even to death, but then he ends up being highly exalted. God gives him greatness in that way. Jesus said, "If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." I don't know the answer to every problem in our country or in our world or even in my life right now. But I do know that the starting place is for me to know who I am in relation to God and see what's needed for relationship among people, and then to do what I alone in a position to do to provide for it, to imitate Jesus in that way, and to trust Him that in the long run, in that kind of doing, my life will find fulfillment and satisfaction and honor and God's favor and blessing. It's not natural. This is not how people usually tick. I was wondering to myself in trying to think through this text. You know, in our Wednesday night class right now, we're looking at the mighty works of Jesus. The wonderful, wonderful, powerful things that He did. And I got to thinking to myself, I wonder in reading this, if I would ever have regarded this as a mighty work of Jesus. And yet He was doing it to teach His disciples, this is how greatness acts. This is what greatness is among the Lord's people. This is how what you're looking for really is to be pursued. All of the things that in the Christian life that involve the idea of submission are things that are usually regarded as very, very distasteful in our current American culture. Whether it is in a family setting to each other, or one family member toward another, or a citizen toward public authorities, or members of a body of the Lord's people to its spiritual overseers or leaders. All those things get debated and so forth. But if you understand that each one of them is simply a reflection or an application of what this passage teaches about how the Lord's people thinks, they look different. So today, let's make it our focus. Do just as I have done, Jesus said. Remember that was said by somebody with a towel wrapped around him. And be glad forever that the one who has all things in His power is this kind of a Lord. That's who we remember today. That's also who we invite you to submit to in humility and trust and obedience. If you believe Jesus is God's Son, say so. Be united with His work and His life and His being and baptism, and walk with Him from day to day. If we can help you in that way this morning, let us know of your need by coming during the first one of these songs, and then the second one we'll prepare for the Lord's Supper today. If we can help you, let us know. Be standing.